from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at WVHTF.org. The West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers. Online at WVAFLCIO.org.
At the legislature today, where were you when the lights went out in the House of Delegates last night? Members were just beginning the debate over the water protection bill. In the Senate today, a first look at the state budget, with the finance chairman warning that even more of the rainy day fund may have to be used to plug up the holes. These stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Beth Voorhees. After the chemical spill from Freedom Industries into the Elk River that contaminated the drinking water of 300,000 West Virginians in nine counties, citizens demanded legislative action. Senators developed Senate Bill 373 to regulate above-ground storage tanks with the promise this would never happen again. After the bill passed unanimously, it was sent to the House. As Aaron Payne reports, late last night, the delegates finally voted on the Water Resource Protection Act.
After a public hearing was held and a majority of delegates were allowed to provide input during three committee references, last night, nearly 2 months after the chemical spill, the House finally had the Water Resource Protection Act on third reading to amend and vote on.
The right to amend was unrestricted on the floor. This sparked a session over 3 hours long as delegates went through 25 amendments. Delegate Tim Manchin began explaining the bill to his colleagues just then.
And their impermeable bottoms. Gee whiz.
The lights went out. An automatic timer had triggered. Once the lights came back on, Judiciary Chair Manchin continued his description of the bill, and Finance Chair Brent Boggs gave the rundown of his committee's work on the bill. Then it was time for the floor amendments. Most of them sought to put provisions back in the bill that the Finance Committee had removed. Some of the first few involved exemptions to registration fees. One only subjected commercial oil and gas at a certain safety standard to a one-time fee, while the other exempted facilities with a national pollutant discharge elimination system permit from more than one registration fee. Those in support of the amendment said that it would prevent high costs from killing jobs. Those in opposition, like Delegate John Ellum, said eliminating fees for some industries would further burden other industries.
I think we need to be really careful about giving these exemptions and continuing to shrink the pool of those paying, thereby leaving higher fees for those who remain, which could be a small startup company.
Both amendments were adopted. Another amendment proposed would reinsert the mandate for the Bureau of Public Health to conduct a long-term medical study on the effects of MCHM on humans. Delegate Misha Poore insisted that the language was needed in case leadership in the office changed.
To the answer of, do you have to do this? And she responded, no. My responsibility on this floor, just like we vote, we can be voted out, someone can be appointed and reappointed. And Ms. Tierney, while she could certainly keep her position, she might not be there next year. And my responsibility is to make sure that whomever is in that seat, for whatever time that they're in that seat, understands that it is the will of this body and the constituents in which we serve that this study is conducted, that information is collected, and it is preserved for future reference.
The amendment was adopted by a vote of 83 to 13. Two amendments proposed by Delegate Mike Manypenny that would allow citizens to sue state agencies for not enforcing regulations were rejected due to fears that it would open the floodgates to frivolous lawsuits. One final amendment that was proposed would reinsert a House judiciary mandate to require water companies serving 100,000 or more customers to install an early chemical detection system at the water intake. Those opposed to this measure feared the technology to detect all hazardous chemicals listed in the amendment was non-existent based on testimony from West Virginia American Water. Therefore, the provision would mandate the impossible. The amendment was revised by a bipartisan group led by Delegate Poore, who cleared up these fears.
that if that technology to adequately detect contaminants as required by this section proves to be not feasible to implement, the public water utility shall report by January 1st, 2015, such to the Joint Committee on Government and Finance with the reasons why such technology is not feasible to obtain or use and suggest alternatives.
Delegate John McCuskey then stood in support of the measure.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just ask one question. If this hadn't smelled like licorice, would we have known it was there?
After all of the amendments were debated, the time came for delegates to speak to the bill. All rose in favor.
If we truly were being faithful to our commitment that this not happen again, that one, we needed to know what are in these tanks along our rivers. I think this bill is a great step toward that, knowing what's in these tanks. Secondly, they want to make sure that these tanks are inspected, that they're, if you're going to truly prevent this from happening in the future, you need to know whether you have safe tanks when you have toxic chemicals along the river, mere miles from the intake of the water system. And I think this bill takes a great step in that direction.
This is an important issue. We're making history here today. It is time that we stand up and protect the citizens of this state.
Then the Water Resource Protection Act was put to a final vote. Senate Bill 373 heads back to the Senate for consideration of all the changes made by the House. It's likely that the bill will be hashed out by a conference committee. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
Senators today discussed three bills dealing with major issues this session, the budget, minimum wage, and the disposal of frack waste. As Ashton Mara reports, senators amended two of those bills, lowering the House's proposed wage increase and exempting certain counties from accepting drilling waste.
Senators voted on their version of the budget bill, which includes the governor's recommended pay raises for school service personnel and state police forensic lab technicians. But Senate Bill 306 only accounts for the $837 teacher pay raise passed by the upper chamber. The House has changed that bill to include a $1,000 across-the-board raise. But Finance Chair Senator Roman Prezioso explains the Senate has not yet voted on House Bill 4333. Known as the haircut bill for short. The bill adjusts lottery appropriations of about $40 million to balance the budget. Since the bill hasn't made it out of committee yet, the Senate's budget pulls more money from the rainy day fund to pay for increases in Medicaid.
The total amount of rainy day funds to be used to fund Medicaid and balance this budget by $41.9 million. Recommending the total amount of the rainy day fund that we'll take out for the 2015 budget of $125.7 million.
Senator Mitch Carmichael was concerned about the increased amount and how it would impact the bond rating. Prezioso says the governor and the budget office estimate the state can use up to $220 million without hurting that rating.
It's our fear that when we come back next year, if there are not any revenue enhancements and we have to continue down the road of the rainy day fund, it will truly jeopardize our bond rating, which has severe implications not only for the state but also cities and counties that have those bonds outstanding.
The bill passed on a 31-2 vote, with Senators Carmichael and Barnes voting against it. The bill, however, will not be taken up by the House. Instead, the two chambers will go to conference committee next week during the extended budget session. After passing six additional bills, senators moved on to those in the amendment phase. That included House Bill 4283, raising the minimum wage. Prezioso moved to amend the bill, allowing for a three-year increase from $7.25 to $8.75. The first year would be a 25-cent increase, followed by 50 cents the next year and 75 cents the third. Senator Craig Blair attempted to amend the bill by adding a new section. It would exempt anyone who makes minimum wage or 10% higher from paying union dues. Blair explained it doesn't prevent them from being a union member, just from paying dues, so low-wage workers can stretch their dollars farther.
I beg you, look out for the folks on this. The people that are struggling from paycheck to paycheck, and we're helping subsidize them. They can become, as their wages go up, they can start paying union dues. but nothing excludes them from being a member. It ought to be like welcome to the union itself, saying, we're going to sign you up, you don't have to pay a penny due. But to be quite honest, I'd be embarrassed if I was the unions and they're wanting to take dues from somebody that's making minimum wage. That's just going too far.
Members stood to be counted for their vote on the amendment, and it failed on party lines, with Senate Democrats voting against it. Also amended on the floor was House Bill 4411, dealing with the disposal of solid drill cuttings from hydraulic fracturing. The Committee on Government Organization amended the bill to allow both Class A and Class B landfills, the two largest classifications in the state, to accept the cuttings. Yeah, but Committee Chair Senator Herb Snyder explains any landfill located in a county containing karst topography or limestone is prohibited from even applying to accept the waste. That includes the counties of the Eastern Panhandle, Greenbrier, Pocahontas, and Nicholas.
We don't have coal, particularly, or even natural gas up in Jefferson Berkeley County, but we do have limestone quarries. So we've been known for 100 years for producing limestone. That's the karst topography region. The cleanup amendment that I offered here earlier, the First Amendment, was to clean that up, that not only do you have that karst topography region, but if you do, that the entire county, it would no longer be able to have drilling waste disposed of in those landfills.
Snyder says the landfills in those counties are extremely unlikely to take any of the waste anyway, because they are on the other side of the mountains from the drilling, and trucking heavy loads of drilling muds to be disposed of is not very practical. The amendment was accepted, and the bill will be up for a vote tomorrow. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in the Senate.
In a moment, we'll learn more about the health issues at this session. First, here's a look at what's coming up in the Senate tomorrow. Among the bills up for passage, House Joint Resolution Number 108, proposing an amendment to the state constitution to exempt property owned by the Boy Scouts of America so it can be leased and used to generate revenue for the organization. House Bill 2387, requiring landlords to make reasonable accommodations for assistive animals for persons with disabilities. House Bill 3108, requiring criminal background checks on applicants for employment in nursing homes. House Bill 4005, to make it a felony for a parent, guardian, or custodian to grossly neglect a child, which creates a substantial risk of bodily injury. House Bill 4006, increasing the penalties for possession and distribution of child pornography. House Bill 4135, designating the first Thursday in May as the West Virginia Day of Prayer. House Bill 4147, authorizing the governor or the legislature to declare a state of preparedness before a forecasted weather disaster or large-scale threat. House Bill 4208, banning synthetic hallucinogens. House Bill 4245, to require professional healthcare licensing boards to obtain retirement information from members to better ascertain future workforce needs. House Bill 4283, raising the minimum wage. House Bill 4318, to require healthcare professionals receive yearly training to treat veterans' mental health issues. House Bill 4411, allowing the disposal of drill cutting and associated drilling waste generated from well sites in commercial solid waste facilities. And House Bill 4454, allowing for the sale of alcoholic beverages in restaurants beginning at 10:30 a.m. on Sundays. On second reading in the Senate tomorrow, House Bill 4210, to provide eligibility for parole for persons who are convicted of criminal offenses where the person was less than 18 years of age at the time the offense was committed. Of the over 2,000 bills introduced in this legislative session, more than 200 of them dealt with health care. With 2 days left, more than 50 of those health-related bills are still under consideration. And our guest tonight has been watching all of them. Tom Stevens is president of Government Relations Specialists in Charleston and is a noted authority on this legislation. Tom, welcome back to the program.
Hey,
glad you're here.
Good to be here.
All yes, right. Well, let's talk first about the abortion bill, because as we speak, it is before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Now, let's review very quickly what the House passed.
Well, the House passed a bill that basically says that its intention is to protect unborn children who may experience pain. That's the premise behind the bill. So it sets a 20-week cutoff for abortions. Mm-hmm. It provides criminal and civil penalties, which are really rather severe, including felony penalties for physicians who don't do exactly the right thing that the bill would prescribe, including following some extensive reporting requirements. It does provide an exemption for potentially future medical problems for the mother of the child, but it did not provide what's called a non-viable baby protection, you could do an abortion for a non-viable child.
All right, and this passed the House. It went to Senate Health Committee.
Yes,
what
it did.
What did the Senate Health Committee do?
Basically, took a lot of the provisions that were in the House bill and made them very different. It did maintain the 20 weeks, even though there was an attempt to extend it to 24 weeks, which many medical professionals believe should be the accepted standard, but it's still at 20 weeks. The penalties were significantly reduced, including removing the jail time and the felony penalties. The reporting requirements were also reduced, and there was a provision in there that would allow abortions in certain cases where medical judgment thought that a non-viable fetus was the situation. And they did rename the provisions of the bill by taking out unborn child and using fetus instead, which matches our federal Supreme Court's ruling in Roe v. Wade.
All right. It'd be interesting to see if House Judiciary, if Senator Cory Palumbo, who chairs that committee, will be able to extend it to 24 weeks. But whatever happens at this committee, it goes to the floor, to the Senate. The Senate has to vote on it.
Correct.
But it needs to be read on three separate days.
Well,
we don't really have three separate days.
Well, the bill has been advanced, so it can move forward.
I see.
But it is important to remember that whatever the Senate does within the next day or so, that the legislative session ends at midnight on Saturday. And so, you know, because we've talked about this before, if the House version is different from the Senate version, you have no bill. So a conference committee is more than likely to be appointed where members of both the House and the Senate will try to get together.
Unless the House just accepts the Senate changes and says, okay, the 20 weeks is still there, we're good.
Right.
And that could happen
that
too.
Could
and
happen.
Then it would go to the
yep.
governor.
Yep.
Let's talk about the prescription-only Sudafed bill.
Sure.
Now, the Senate passed the bill as prescription only for everybody. But the House has changed it. How has the House changed it?
Well, the Senate provision does say prescription only, but it does make an exception for pseudoephedrine products, actually, that are already on the market that have we'd call it tamper-resistant, but they call it conversion-resistant. In other words, those products can't be converted into meth, and that's really the foundation of the legislation. It overwhelmingly passed the Senate and went over to the House. And the House has changed it in the House Judiciary Committee by taking out the prescription requirement altogether, but making some other modifications, including reducing the gram limit, which is in our current law, which is basically 48 grams.
So you can buy less of it.
Half of it.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And there's some other requirements that would require convicted offenders of meth laws to go on a registry, which would be posted, and they couldn't buy meth because they would be. Or they couldn't buy pseudoephedrine to make meth would be the allegation.
Okay.
Because
my question here is, there was a very big lobbying attempt on this bill. Then the Healthcare Consumer Products Association really wanted the meth offender registry, really wanted, look, only drug offenders who are in this registry
Correct.
Need to go to a doctor to get a prescription for a cold or allergy medicine. Mm-hmm. But law-abiding citizens don't have to do that. How much did the House accept the lobbyists' take on this?
Well, there has been a lot of discussion on both sides, from all interested parties.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say that the advertising and the internet and the robocalls had an influence? Only individual legislators could make that choice. Okay. There are legislators who legitimately would say, well, yes, maybe this is not time for the legislation in West Virginia. The medical community and law enforcement say it is time mm-hmm. to address our severe meth lab problem.
That's right. And so this ultimately will have to be settled by a conference committee.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we're right back to
this is
major
a wide
disagreements.
Difference.
Yes. Yep.
Okay, what are we to make of whether there should be medical monitoring in Senate Bill 373 or whether there shouldn't be, that the Bureau of Public Health is going to do it anyway, so take it out of the bill, put it back in the bill. What are we to make of that?
Well, we're talking about Senate Bill 373. That's the water bill. Mm-hmm. We consider that one of the major health bills mm-hmm. because there is an unknown, believably unknown factor for persons who consumed or used the water that was contaminated, mm-hmm. and then there has been a debate as to whether it's safe or not. I think it's determined that it's safe now, but some medical professionals have suggested that because there's the chemical is really unknown in human consumption, that there needs to be testing that begins now, particularly with those that complained, had a medical complaint, and then to continue that forward in a monitoring fashion to determine whether there are adverse medical conditions or not.
That's going to be interesting to see if the Senate accepts that provision, that medical monitoring provision, because as it left the Senate, it was simply an inspect and regulate kind of bill.
That's right.
Tom Stevens, good to see you, and thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And here's a look at what's coming up in the House tomorrow. Among the bills up for passage, Senate Bill 3, to enable an owner of real property to pass the property simply and directly to a beneficiary upon the owner's death without probate. Senate Bill 202, to authorize the creation and recognition of benefit corporations. Senate Bill 252, providing that a pupil who successfully completes or is certified as making satisfactory progress toward completion of juvenile drug court can return to school. Senate Bill 356, the governor's bill reforming state purchasing procedures. Senate Bill 393, allowing the governor to borrow money from the rainy day fund. Senate Bill 419, to provide immunity from certain offenses for a person who seeks health care for someone or himself or herself who is experiencing a drug overdose. Senate Bill 431, changing the renewal cycle for driver's licenses from 5 to 8 years and allowing for online renewal. Senate Bill 450, allowing the sale and consumption of alcoholic liquors in outdoor dining areas. Senate Bill 477, prohibiting administrators from compelling a teacher to attend any work-related event during a planning period, except for occasional specified instances. Senate Bill 523, providing for an additional state veteran skilled nursing facility in Beckley. Senate Bill 621, authorizing insurers to offer flood insurance. Senate Bill 623, requiring coal mining companies to notify the director of the Office of Mine Health and Safety of a positive drug or alcohol test of a minor or for refusing to submit a sample or tampering with a sample. House Bill 4015, the budget bill. Among the bills on second reading in the House tomorrow, Senate Joint Resolution Number 12 proposing an amendment to the state constitution to protect and conserve West Virginia water resources for the use and benefit of its citizens. Senate Joint Resolution Number 14 proposing a constitutional amendment to designate spending from the future fund. Senate Bill 6 regulating the sale of cold medicines used to make methamphetamine. Senate Bill 317 prohibiting city ordinances from being enacted that restrict the sale or carry of a firearm. Senate Bill 353, permitting the Division of Forestry the authority to investigate and enforce violations occurring in state forests. Senate Bill 391, providing salary increases to teachers and school service personnel. Senate Bill 409, the governor's bill relating to education reform. And Senate Bill 461, creating the Future Fund.
And this has been the Legislature Today. Tomorrow, we'll wrap up our nightly coverage with a visit from Governor Ray Tomlin to review his legislative agenda. On Saturday, the final day of the 81st West Virginia Legislature, we invite you to log on to our website, wvpublic.org, for complete coverage. Reporters Ashton Mara and Aaron Payne will be at the Capitol tweeting the latest about the final bills being considered. Digital reporter Dave Mistich will be keeping a live blog outlining all of the action. I'll be monitoring speeches and floor debates from the House and the Senate and posting those. Our website will be your go-to source to check in with all that's happening. It's final day coverage, Saturday, March 8th on West Virginia Public. .org. Ooh, on live TV, no less. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for legislative coverage provided by the High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Details at wvhtf.org. And by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers. Online at wvaflcio.org.